Welcome to the Payments Podcast, where we talk to innovators about how they're reinventing, reimagining, and recreating the payments ecosystem.
Yeah, so as far as, you know, the mobile point of sale, it's just a question about enabling commerce, making commerce easy for small merchants. And what the initial Square product was something that I needed personally. So the idea was no more complicated than meeting the needs of somebody who happened to be selling something, which was me. And I recognized a need personally. And then, you know, my friend Jack and I had already decided to start a company. We're looking for a product to pursue. And I convinced him to, you know, stop what we were doing and make a payment system. So that was the genesis. Now, where it's gone from there has been sort of an evolution of enabling better and better tools for merchants to get paid. So the, you know, the arc of the Square product line has always been making it better for merchants, you know, providing more information, better ways to sell, easier ways to move, move their inventory, collect their money, get paid and communicate. So it's been really fun. I mean, honestly.
Well, I think a lot of people would characterize the innovation as, you know, sticking a dongle onto an iPhone or an Android phone, and it was really the business model that was the innovation. Surely the mobile phone became the device that enabled that innovation, but absent the business model that went along with that, you'd still be no better off than you were in any other wireless mobile point of sale environment. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree. Yeah.
Well, I mean, go ahead. I'm sorry.
The hardware was necessary and still is necessary to transact the way merchants need to transact, which is in a card-present, secure environment. As the requirements for identity change, the hardware will either remain the same, change, or disappear, depending on the need.
Deciding to get into payments, I mean, it's like this amazingly complicated, crazy space with all kinds of standards and rules and players. I'd love to get your perspective on, you know, the idea that hindsight is 20/20. So what would you have loved to have known then that you know now? And this will sort of set up the conversation about what you think some of the challenges are that emerging players that are entering payments face today.
Well, the fundamental thing, and this ties in perfectly with 630 and what we're doing, adding value there, is what I would love to have now is the relationship. What I would love to have had then is the relationships that I have now. When we started Square, the hardware, the servers, the technology was working in 3 weeks. It took us 18 months to launch the product in a legal and compliant and secure way. And it was not a technical challenge. It was a business challenge to get all of the regulations, you know, PCI, KYC, the money transmitter relationships, the banking relationships, the capital reserves, the fraud, all of the things that we needed to do took a year and a half. And ultimately, those came down to relationships with larger entities. So we were processing with, you know, banks that were, massive. Our first banking partner was Chase, and they were fantastic to work with. But, you know, it took a long time to develop that relationship. And, our first processing partners, just again and again, it were these relationships that needed to be in place for us to do what we had to do. And so what 630 is doing is providing a shortcut to those relationships for the companies that are in the program. So I always like to say that, you need three things if you want to have a successful company. You need a problem that you're solving, real product that is solving a problem. You need a great team, and then you need enough money to keep it together. If you have those three things, you will succeed, unless you are in a financial services business. In which case you need a fourth thing, which is you need the relationships with the various companies. So if you are providing an insurance product, then you need underwriting. You need capital requirements. If you are providing a payment product, then you need processing, money transmitter licenses, banking licenses, government approvals, PCI approval. If you're doing some sort of investment product, you need broker licenses, dealer licenses. So at every point of the ecosystem, the startup faces the need to partner with organizations that have resources that allow them to play. And it was true in Square's case. It is true in the case of all the 630 companies, and it is generally true in the financial service market that you're not going to see much interesting stuff happen without these partnerships between the startup and major players.
So I mean, I would agree with that, and because payments is this really complicated ecosystem that takes a while to really unravel and to understand where to start. And one of the things that I think people miss is that payments is about managing risk, ultimately. And it is why all the regulations are in place. How does 630 and the assembly of advisors, and the teams that you have in place there, how do they help entrepreneurs understand where to look? Because it's kind of daunting. You have all these different players that if you are in payments or financial services, you need to access. But how do you help them understand who to go to first and what the real big problems and potholes are that they should be looking out for?
Well, the way you phrase it is it makes it sound like a big problem. It's not a big problem. It turns out the relationships they need are pretty darn obvious, right? But it depends, from company to company what those obvious needs are. For instance, we've got one company right now that has a fantastic product for compliant communication with banks. Well, what do they need? They need intros to a bank. They need bank compliance officers. They have a fantastic product that has a real value. And then, as sort of a bonus, there are other organizations that face similar compliant risks. And so this is where you can kind of get a multiplier. You can sit there and say, oh, well, banks have a lot of compliant issues. So do brokerages, there are some introductions we can make across, boundaries. But in general, compliance is very important with highly regulated industries. Money tends to be a highly regulated industry. But it's not difficult to figure out where the needs are. It's not difficult at all. I mean, with each country, it's not like we should have to sit there and scratch our heads and go, oh, where? It's like, oh, yeah, you got to meet these guys. So absolutely, it's never been a problem because it's so darn obvious.
Yeah, I take your point that it's obvious depending upon the problem set that you're solving. I still think, though, that in payments, depending upon where you are in payments, it's a platform ecosystem, and if you really are trying to create something new and generate that ignition, Square didn't have that problem initially because there were a lot of consumers running around with plastic cards. And all that merchants like you needed to be able to do was to accept those cards. But a lot of innovators are trying to start something brand new where they don't really have the consumer base and they don't have the merchant base. And sometimes they just need someone to tell them, all right, you need players on both sides, but what you really need is X. How do you solve for that at 630?
We don't. I mean, if you're trying to do a two-party platform play, I will vote against you. unless somebody comes to me with a beautiful sort of game theory consistent explanation as to how they're going to magically create a two-sided market, for payments or any financial service, I just look at them and go, yeah, you know, we all love to have, you know, magic. You know, if you could fiat it into existence, great, but you can't. So those are not the companies that we're looking for. At least I'm sure that I won't speak for 630. I'm not looking for anything like that because I think those plays are very, very rare. And typically they involve not – they involve sort of co-opting an existing system from another ecosystem. So the mobile wallet co-opts the phone number. So, you know, if phone numbers weren't unique and precious, then you wouldn't have mobile wallet plays. So, but even those are having trouble getting off the ground, you know, even when it's done by Google, you know, so.
Yeah, no, those are very hard situations to crack. What have you seen at 630 in terms of the innovators that you have there that really get you excited, or even just in the space generally? Where do you see the greatest opportunity in the payments financial services arena?
So I am most interested in the data around the payments. As far as 630 is going, you know, the companies that interest me are ones who sit there and say, you know, we have this general trend of opening up information, and I think that trend is unstoppable, but some people try to hold it back. So anytime a company can take information that is, you know, currently being protected and open it up, that to me is very interesting. So any sort of sharing, any sort of crowdsourcing, any sort of, any sort of freedom that can be brought to an ecosystem, I'm in favor of, and I think, you know, the wind's at your back if you've got a company like that.
Final question. Fast forward a couple of decades, and, you know, we are in the midst of this transformation from a world that is all about plastic cards and point of sale to mobile, digital. How do you see this evolving, and how quickly do you think it will actually evolve? How long do you think it will be before most of us use our mobile devices, whether that's a phone or something we haven't envisioned yet, but is a device connected to the internet, to actually do all of our shopping and buying?
I think it's inevitable. As far as the timeline, I don't think it's going to happen in the next 5 years, but I think anything past 5 years in technology is a ridiculously arrogant and misguided pronouncement. So it's imminent. It's imminent. And as we, you know, continue to make improvements and refinements in the way machines interact with humans, what I think you're going to see is not just the wallet disappear, but the mobile wallet disappear too.
Really, and that's interesting.
Yeah, I think the mobile wallet is an abstraction of a physical thing that's on its way out. As the, you know, the wallet carries pieces of paper, those paper, it's kind of on the way out, then the wallet carries pieces of plastic. Well, the plastic's just an identifier, so that's probably on its way out. I would imagine the wallet itself being on its way out. And at some core level, you just have an identity system. Yeah. And identity is the foundation of all payments, and I think it will, as an abstraction, dissolve into just identity. And wallet is not an identity; it's just a keeping thing. And I don't know that the wallet's appropriate as an analogy. It's just what we use because it's something we have, and it's hard to explain the future without sort of, you know, like explaining the car as a horseless carriage is a crummy way to explain the car. But now that you have the concept of the car, I can say car. But if we were, you know, 150 years ago, I would have to have said, well, it's like a carriage, but there's no horse. That doesn't really explain to you what a car is.
Right, right. Well, I mean, I think that's an interesting point. I mean, I do think we use the word wallet because it's ascribed to mean a container where all this stuff just happens to be accumulated to make it easy.
Yeah, we use wallet not because it's appropriate, because I don't have to explain what a wallet is.
Exactly. That's interesting. Well, listen, Jim, thanks for taking a few minutes. I appreciate the fact that you've been on a whirlwind tour and have had lots of other things taking your time. So thanks for taking a few minutes to speak with me today.
My pleasure. And you're with it's payments, right?
Yes. So.